during Epiphany, we focus on the glory of that one who was born so humbly in Bethlehem. In Lent, we see his ignominious death. And those two things come together in the 11th chapter of John, where the glorious Lord of life raises Lazarus from the dead. And then in the 47th verse, we read, "So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, 'What are we to do? For this man performs many signs.'" And the last sentence in that paragraph, "So from that day on, they made plans to put him to death." When Dr. Jonas Salk developed the polio vaccine, it was received by a grateful nation, your nation. But when Jesus came with the cure for Lazarus's fatal illness, the rulers called the Sanhedrin together and decided to put him to death. The brutal heathen Romans, who had ruled Palestine for more than 50 years with an iron fist, did not seek to harm Jesus. But as a reward for bringing Lazarus back from the grave, his own people decided that he must die. Now, the chief priests and Pharisees who called this council were not normally united like this. The chief priests belonged to a group known as the Sadducees, who denied that there was such a thing as resurrection from the dead. The Pharisees believed in the resurrection. The Sadducees did not believe that there were such beings as angels. The Pharisees did. The Sadducees controlled the exchange of money for the temple offerings and for the sale of sacrificial livestock on the temple grounds, reaping enormous wealth. The Pharisees, on the other hand, were more interested in getting the honor of the people. And yet here they are, united against Jesus, two groups that do not see eye to eye on many things, discussing what to do about a man who raises people from the dead. Finally, Caiaphas, the high priest, takes charge, just as he would at Jesus' trial. He thinks he has figured out a way to do what he wants to do and make it sound okay, maybe even noble. He says, "You know nothing at all," or how would we put it? "You idiots, you don't realize that it's better for you that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish." With such noble, patriotic purposes, the council then set about discussing plans to take his life. Perhaps the saddest part of all this is that it is so easy to imagine. Our sinful human nature relies on wealth and honor from this world. Of course, both of those things are gifts from God, but our flesh would make gods out of them. We're tempted to think that the solution to all problems lies in finding enough money for education, for clothing, for food, for shelter, for transportation, and on and on. At times, this running after wealth can be ennobled with the work ethic, which is also a gift from God. You have to work for what you get. "I've worked for everything I have." In this way, money does not get all the praise, but some of the honor comes back to us. The chief priests saw their wealth threatened by this man who wanted to make the temple a house of prayer. The Pharisees saw their positions of honor threatened by this man who told them that they were sinners in need of forgiveness. We too may be tempted because we want to hold on to the things that we treasure. We want to have a certain amount of control in our lives. But although there are some things that are put under our control, we remain in the hands of God, and our sinful human nature squirms and wriggles trying to get out of His hands. We would like to make our own way, maintain our own positions, control our own lives, using the same methods and tools that we use to control those things that are under us. In this way, our sinful human nature would also put God under us. But no matter how healthy and wealthy we may be, it is a gift from God. And no matter how good we may appear, how honored we may be before other people, God looks on the heart. He sees and hears all our secret meetings with ourselves. So when we get down to it, the permission to stand in His presence can only come from the forgiving, cleansing blood of Jesus Christ. What a comfort it is that God is still in control. He used Caiaphas, the high priest, to speak the truth that Jesus would die in the place of the people. And this speaks peace to our hearts also. He used the murder of His own Son to establish our salvation. He accepted Jesus' sacrifice as the payment for all sin, even when it was carried out by the hand of a self-seeking Sanhedrin, a conniving Caiaphas, and a heathen governor. Is there anything, then, that God is unable to work out for our good? He who did not spare His own Son, but gave Him up for us all, how shall He not also, along with Him, graciously give us all things? No wonder we sing, "Jesus, Thy blood and righteousness my beauty are, my glorious dress. Midst flaming worlds in these arrayed, with joy shall I lift up my head." Hymn 371, stanzas 1, 3, 5, and 7.